Scripture reading before today's lesson is from Psalm 19, verses 9 and 10. Be reading from the English Standard Version. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The rules of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, even much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey, and drippings of the honeycomb.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, I want to welcome all the guests that are here. And if anyone would like a family report, if you want to, the ushers at the side will have those. If anybody wants to take notes or to keep up with some things. I want to thank the elders for giving me the opportunity. Oh, I'm sorry. Raise your hand as they're walking through. I want to thank the elders for giving me the opportunity to speak. I've been up here 18 years now, and always considered a privilege any time I've asked to speak. Also want to welcome my family that's here, and Casey's family that's here. And before services, Debbie Grushon said it must be come check on your kids day, since she's here, my folks are here. And, also want to thank some friends that are here, and have some colleagues that are here. And for all those that are listening on the podcast that weren't able to make it, this is for you as well. For you colleagues of mine, you know how I tend to talk fast when I'm with clients and on the phone or in person. So I sort of tend to do that in the pulpit as well. So I'm trying to tell myself to slow down. God works in mysterious ways. I always love stories that give you goosebumps. Whether they are stories that are told from books that you read or stories passed down from generation to generation, especially stories from the Bible. I'm going to share some of these today. The English poet William Cowper wrote the hymn, God Moves in a Mysterious Way. It is reported that William suffered with deep depression all of his life. At one point, he had a mental breakdown and tried to take his own life. Yet the Lord was with him, and one item quoted by William is that even in our blackest moments, God watches over us. So let's read the poem. God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take, the cloud you so much dread, are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. Many believe the poem is based on the words of the prophet Isaiah in 55 verses 8 and 9. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my way, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. You very likely have said that at a time or two in your life. God moves in mysterious ways. Maybe it was the way you marveled at the way God does things. Ways that you have never done things yourself if God had asked you for your opinion. Maybe you got from point A in life to point B, and when you took a break to look back, you think, wow, I would have never gotten to this place in life without God's help. Or even, this isn't how I had life planned out, but God has a different plan. Although there are many things about God and how He works in our lives that we do not understand, we can rest with confidence that He is always with us and that He will always take care. Today I would like to share with you three principles concerning God's movement in our lives. Hopefully these principles will help you gain a better perspective on how God may be working in your life. You also notice I have a picture of gold in the background. That's going to come into play throughout the series of various scriptures and stories. God moves in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. I suppose one of the greatest mysteries about God is that he often works through pain and sorrow. That God would allow one of his children to suffer seems so contrary to what we know and believe about him. Our tendency is to think that God's children should be immune from difficulty. We reason that there should be a wall of protection that should keep us immune from all difficulty. Yet Scripture teaches us over and over again that suffering is sometimes a part of God's will for our lives. Isaiah tells us something very special about God's feelings towards His children who are suffering. In Isaiah 57, verse 15, "For this is what the High and Exalted One says, He who lives forever, His name is holy. I live in a high and holy place, but also with the one who is contrite and lowly in spirit, to revive the spirit of the lowly and to revive the heart of the contrite." Perhaps there are a few moments in our Christian life when we are closer to God than when we are suffering. I'm going to concentrate today on Joseph from the Old Testament as an example of God working in a mysterious way. The story of Joseph can be found in Genesis 37, verse 1 through chapter 50, verse 26. Now, for those visiting with us today, perhaps it's been a while since you've read or heard the story of Joseph. For the regular members, I know Dan just preached about Joseph last week in his back-to-school lesson, but it takes me 3 months to prepare a lesson. So when I found out he was going to preach on that, I asked him to leave some of the stories out, and bless his heart, he did. Now let's refresh on the story of Joseph. Joseph was the younger son of Jacob. He was known to his older brothers as their father's favorite. For this reason, his 10 older brothers conspired against him and sold him to slave traders, while telling the father the boy had been mauled by an animal. Joseph had been given dreams of God's plan for his life. So with confidence and strength, he endured in this amazing story in Genesis. The slave traders took him into Egypt and sold him into Potiphar, one of the Pharaoh's officers. Joseph served his master well and gained great favor. But the master's wife tried to seduce Joseph, who we know was a young man of impeccable integrity. After he rejected her, she went to her husband with false accusations. It resulted in Joseph's imprisonment. Once again, God proved his presence and protection for Joseph. The prison keeper befriended him and learned of Joseph's divine ability to interpret. Which leads us into this part of Joseph's life in Genesis 40, verse 14 through 15. And he's speaking to this prison mate at this time. So start in verse 14. "But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon." Joseph has not been indifferent to his suffering. It has affected him deeply. Joseph is saying, "I was torn away from my loving father. I was betrayed by my own brothers. I was brutally sold as a slave and humiliated. I was falsely accused of a crime that I did not commit. I am completely innocent, and I do not deserve to be in this place." Joseph poured out his heart to this man, but to no avail. As we see a few verses later in verse 23, the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Ouch, how hurtful is that when someone forgets you? Then we read in Genesis 41, verse 1, "When 2 full years had passed," rather than immediately being delivered out of prison, Joseph had to wait another 2 years. So let that sink in. 2 years. I can't wait 2 minutes when I'm in the drive-thru at Zaxby's. But he had to wait 2 full years? Why did this happen? Why is always one of the first questions we ask when we are made to suffer. Why is this happening to me? Why, God, are you allowing this? What good can come from this? I started thinking about what Joseph might have been thinking about and pondering on during those 2 years while he was in prison. Perhaps he felt rejoiced, believing that at any moment he might be released. Joseph probably waited eagerly to hear someone call his name. Every time the door opened, he probably wondered if that was his moment of release. But eventually, the season of rejoicing began to fade, and Joseph found himself entering into a deeper, a darker stage of his life. Perhaps he felt resentment. Whenever we lose something, we experience a form of grief. One of the stages of grief is anger and resentment. As moments turn into days, and days into weeks, and weeks into months, and months into years, somewhere along the way, a horrible sense of reality began to set in. Joseph began to realize that it wasn't going to happen right away. The door wasn't going to suddenly swing open for him. Perhaps he felt a sense of resentment. Joseph probably was tempted to resent the butler for forgetting him. With that resentment, old emotions concerning his brothers could begin to resurface. And no doubt, over and over again, he had to work his way through it. Maybe he was even tempted to resent God for allowing this to happen. But as time passed by, and Joseph began to work his way through these feelings of resentment, a process of spiritual refinement began to take place. Spiritual refinement is a process. Peter gives a good description of this in 1 Peter 1, verse 6 and 7. In all this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that the proven genuineness of your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes, even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Now, gold is a substance that is refined in the fire. As gold is melted, any impurities that are mingled in with it separate from the gold and come to the surface. The refiner then skims off these impurities, making the gold a little more pure. It's been written that in ancient times, the refiner would repeat this process over and over again until he could see on the surface of the gold his own reflection. Peter refers to the trials of our faith. Within most of us, there are spiritual impurities, often so well hidden that not even we ourselves are fully aware of them. Spiritual impurities such as greed and pride, anger, selfishness, worry, doubt, and fear. These impurities are in direct conflict with our walk with God. They contaminate our relationship with Him. Therefore, in order for us to mature spiritually, God has to cause these impurities to surface so they may be exposed and then extracted. Peter says the way God does this is through the trial of our faith. Like each of us, Joseph had certain spiritual impurities that needed to be removed. Most likely, it was during these 2 years that many of these impurities were revealed and Joseph's relationship with God was refined. God did a great work in Joseph's life while he was in prison. We can read this when we jump ahead to Genesis 41, verse 50. Verse 50. Before the years of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, Bas and the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Joseph is eventually going to be released and given an Egyptian woman to become his wife. Joseph is then going to father two sons. And so he says in verse 51, Joseph named his firstborn Manasseh and said, "It is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household." Then verse 52, the second son he named Ephraim and said, "It is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering." God has removed the sting from Joseph's memory, and he has blessed Joseph beyond measure in a place that once seemed to bring only suffering. The names of Joseph's two sons bear testimony to the value of God's refining process. We need to have the same attitude where we don't look back during our trials in our life. And I know that is easier said than done, and I personally have to pray about that often. Friends, Joseph had the attitude of looking forward with hope and not backward with regret. God moves in a miraculous way His glory to declare. I want to tell a story about a colleague of mine. There's a person in my office that wanted to go to Disney World with her older boys and their families last year. And she was expressing the difficulty and worry about coming up with the funds for taking the Disney trip. She prayed about it and let it be in God's hands. And would you know that a few weeks later, she found a gold coin in her home that she hasn't seen in years. She took that gold coin to a coin collector and received more than enough funds for the expense of her Disney trip. And I told this person when she told me this story that she was my inspiration for my next sermon, which was going to be about God working in mysterious ways. Now back to our story on Joseph. Genesis 41, verse 1 through 7. When 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile When out of the river there came up seven cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, seven other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the seven sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. Seven heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, seven other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the seven healthy full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. God gave two special dreams to Pharaoh. Both of the dreams had the same meaning, yet Pharaoh didn't know what they meant. So then let's dig further. Verses 8 through 14. When in the morning his mind was troubled, so he sent for all the magicians and wise men of Egypt. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but no one could interpret them for him. Then the chief cupbearer, who we just talked about earlier, that was in prison with Joseph, the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Today I'm reminded of my shortcomings. Pharaoh was once angry with his servants, and he imprisoned me and the chief baker in the house of the captain of the guard. Each of us had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. Now a young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. We told him our dreams, and he interpreted them for us, giving each man the interpretation of his dream. And things turned out exactly as he interpreted them to us. I was restored to my position, and the other man was impaled." So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Joseph offered Pharaoh his interpretation of the dreams. The seven fat cows and healthy ears represented 7 years of plenty. The skinny cows and beaten ears represented 7 years of extreme famine. He then continued to give his advice, although he wasn't asked to do so, and in so doing, he clarified everything. During the first set of 7 years, they should harvest and store as much grain as possible, so that when the 7 years of famine arrive, the Egyptians would have enough to eat. By offering this advice, Joseph was actually answering the million-dollar question. How is it possible to have the good and the bad at the same time? Because that's life, folks. Every day is filled with good and bad. Life is certainly not boring. One day you're on top of the world, laughing and at peace, perhaps feeling like Joseph was with his father, with his brother or his father. The next day you may be sad and hurt, hopefully not betrayed by your brothers like Joseph, but life does throw wrinkles at us. Turn to God during trials and thank God daily for what he has done for you. God works in meaningful ways his will to accomplish. I always love stories from World War II. In fact, I saw something this morning on the news that we're coming upon the 70th anniversary from the end of World War II. And whenever we take a trip, Casey always gets me a book, and I've been, the past several years, been liking to keep up with stories from World War II since both my grandfathers fought in the war. In the book Finding Your Way, Gary LaFerra tells an amazing story, taken from the records of the United States Naval Institute following the Second World War. The USS Astoria engaged the Japanese during the battle for Savo Island before any other ships from the U.S. Naval Fleet arrived. During the crucial night of the battle, August 8, 1942, 73 years ago last week, the Astoria scored several direct hits on a Japanese vessel, but was itself badly damaged and sank the next day. Now, when I read this first time, it helps if you close your eyes to kind of visual this. About 2 a.m., a young naval officer named Elgin Staples from Midwestern Ohio was swept overboard by the blast. Wounded in both legs by shrapnel and still in shock, he was kept afloat by a narrow life belt that he managed to activate with a simple trigger mechanism. At around 6 a.m., Officer Staples was rescued by a passing destroyer and returned to the Astoria, whose captain was attempting to save the ship by beaching her. The effort failed, and Staples, still wearing the same life belt, found himself back in the water. Then at 12:30 p.m., some 10.5 hours later, he was picked up again, this time by the USS President Jackson. He was one of only 500 survivors of this battle. On board the new ship, Officer Staples, hugging that life belt with gratitude, looked at the small piece of equipment for the first time. He scrutinized every stitch of that lifebelt that served him so well. And would you know it had been manufactured by Firestone Tire and Rubber Company of Akron, Ohio, and it bore a registration number in gold letters. Given home leave, Staple told this story and asked his mother, who worked for Firestone, about the purpose of the number on the belt. She replied that the company insisted on personal responsibility for the war effort, and the number was unique and assigned to only one inspector. Staples remembered everything about that life belt and quoted the number. There was a moment of stunned silence in the room, and then his mother spoke. "That was my personal code that I put to every item I was responsible for approving." Now back to our story on Joseph. In Genesis 41, verse 15 through 16, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." "I cannot do it," Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires." Skip down to verses 37 through 44. The plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his officials. So Pharaoh asked them, "Can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there was no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger, and he put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and people shouted before him, "Make way!" Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all of Egypt." The life of Joseph is a good example of the mysterious way God sometimes works. In Genesis 50, verse 20, Joseph says to his brothers, "You intended to harm me, but God intended for it to be good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." In this statement, Joseph summarizes the events of his life, beginning with the evil his brothers did to him, and ending with his recognition that it was all part of God's magnificent plan for his people. There was a famine in Canaan, where Abraham's descendants, the Hebrew people, had settled. So Joseph brought all of them out of Canaan and into Egypt. Joseph was able to provide food for them, for them all, because he'd become governor of Egypt and was in charge of buying and selling food. Joseph's brothers had sold him into slavery some 20 years earlier and were now dependent on him for their survival. This irony is only a small part of what happened in Joseph's life. God's hand is obvious through all of Joseph's history. If Joseph had not been governor over Egypt and moved his kinsmen there, there would be no story of Moses, no exodus from Egypt 400 years later. I'm sure if Joseph would have had a choice whether or not his brother sold him into slavery, it's reasonable to assume that Joseph would have said no. If Joseph had been given the choice whether or not to be imprisoned on false charges, again, he probably would have said no. Who would willingly choose such mistreatment? But it was in Egypt that Joseph was able to save his family, and it was in prison that the door opened to the palace. God works in a mysterious, miraculous, and meaningful ways to accomplish his glory. How should we respond to God's mysterious movement in our lives? This is when we should strive to draw closer to God. We should spend quiet time alone with God, thinking and meditating upon his word. We should listen for his voice to speak. We should pray with an honest and open heart. We must trust God's voice and heart. Though it may seem mysterious to us at the time, God does many mighty and miraculous things in such times. I'm going to end with a scripture from Job. As we know, Job was a blameless man and upright, one who revered God and avoided evil. Satan tempted him, but he did not fail. In Job 23, verse 10, "But he knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I will come forth as gold. If there's anything that we can help you with this morning by asking prayers on your behalf, or if there's someone here this morning that would like to become part of God's family with hopes to see the awesome, mysterious, magnificent, miraculous Lord and Savior one day in heaven, now would be the time to do so.